it after four. So I've seen quite a few other faces and bubbles on. So maybe what we'll do is we'll kick off with a roll call and make sure we've got quorum and take it from.
We're one short of quorum right now.
Okay. Why don't, you know what, in the interest of time, Ingrid, why don't we start the roll call and then hopefully by the time we get to the end of it, we'll have quorum.
Right. So I will start at the top. We have Savik on the phone, Eileen from Toronto Region Board of Trade, and this is in alphabetical order as it comes up on my list. Alessandra from MTO, Brad Butt from MBOT. We have Councillor Fonseca. Welcome, Councillor. We have Amanda Chum from Transport Canada. We have Daryl Shipp on the line. And we have a Jeffrey Piera from MTO as well. Sabir Syed is on the phone. Shane Raymond. Suzanne Acton-Gervais. Stephen Tufts. And from the GTAA, we have Atul Sharma. Michael Mandel. Greg Owen. Farris Curry and Eileen Waiter is on the phone. Is joined as well. And Amanda, can I ask you to introduce the guests that are with you today? Sorry to put you on the spot.
That's Amanda from Transport Canada.
Amanda Chum. Yeah, and it looks like she's dropped off, actually.
Okay.
I can introduce myself, if that's okay.
Sure.
Oh, yeah, so, sure.
Chris Brodkin here. I'm the new manager for Transport Canada in the regional office for the Policy and Coordination Group. I think I recognize, actually, a few of you guys from before. So I actually used to work at Transport Canada a couple years ago in airports policy. My main file was working on the CATSA privatization back then, but maybe, Greg, we might have met at Kelowna, the Airports Council back then, or Lori maybe then as well. But very happy to be back at Transport Canada and settling into this new role here. So I'm here, and there's also another colleague on my team here as well. Kieran is also here from Transport Canada along with Amanda. So we're happy to be here. Thank you.
Great. Thanks very much. I think I saw somebody else pop on as well, Ingrid. So I think we might have quorum. So who just joined?
John Davidson just joined.
Good. Good. Okay. Hi, John.
Yes.
How are you?
Hi, Lori. Okay. Nice to see you, Michael. Nice. At all.
So I think that means we have quorum. There may be a few others that are joining us, and so we can just keep an eye on that. So maybe I'll just quickly get going. Couple of small item changes, really just to the names of the items on our agenda today. So in terms of approval of the agenda, slight name change. We're going to have Toronto Pearson update, the challenge with federal agency resourcing and process due to ongoing health measures is the title of one of the presentations, and that will be delivered by Greg Owen and Atul Sharma from the GTAA. We also have another presentation that's coming from GTA folks, and that's going to be called Discovery Around Why Pearson Matters, and that will be delivered by, is that you, Eileen, that's taking the lead on that deck?
That is me. Thank you, Lori.
Excellent. Perfect. Thanks so much. So with those two changes in names of presentations, if I can ask for an approval of today's agenda. That was moved by Suzanne, seconded by Councillor Fonseca. All those in favor? Any opposed? Hearing none.
Lori, Suzanne is only a resource member. So
oh,
she
sorry.
Can't vote.
Sorry, Suzanne. We'll need Sorry. Somebody else to move the motion then, if we could. Brad Butt to move it, seconded by Councillor Fonseca. Thanks, Ingrid. And so all those in favor? Any opposed? Okay, hearing no opposition, we'll consider the agenda for today carried. We also have the minutes that were circulated for our March 22nd meeting. Just open the floor for any discussion about the minutes, errors, omission, changes. Okay, hearing none, if I could have someone to move our March 22nd, 2022. So Trevor McPherson from Toronto, Mississauga Board of Trade. And a seconder, please. somebody else that was at the March meeting. Councillor Fonseca, were you at the March 22nd meeting? Yes, okay. Then all those in favor? Any opposed? Sorry, Saeed, you've got your hand up. Is there a change you want to make to the minutes? Sabir?
No, sorry, Laurie, I was just going to second the motion earlier.
Oh, that's okay. Why. Sorry, I just want to make sure you didn't have any changes. Okay, so any opposed to the minutes? We'll consider that carried then. There were a couple of items that are carried over from the March 22nd minutes, then they've both been acted upon. One was a request to get more information about the estimated person hours for our runway rehabilitation project. And that was circulated by email on March the 23rd by Ingrid. And the second was Jonathan Wheel shared links to their York Regional Job Portal. And that also was circulated in a news release that he had. So those materials and the follow-up items from our last meeting have been covered off. So with that, we'll move into our regular items. And the first is our consultative committee update. And I'll hand this over to Perez, who will walk us through that. And I'm sorry, just before Perez begins, I should have said off the top, my sincere apologies. I have an item that I do have to leave the meeting for at 4:30. So I'll be handing the chair over to Michael at that point. Okay. Go ahead, Perez.
Thanks, Laurie, and I welcome everyone. And I hope some of you had the chance to glance at the consultative committee newsletter that went out last Friday on June 3rd. A couple of articles that stand out for me are the Eglinton Crosstown West Extension, or ECWE for short, that was announced in the provincial budget. As some of you might already know, the provincial government announced that it will provide $24.4 million to advance the next phase of study needed to connect the Eglinton Crosstown West Extension with Toronto Pearson. We do welcome this funding commitment towards a necessary transit connection to help move passengers, employees, and critical goods, which is an important part of Ontario's economic recovery. Our next step is to work with all levels of government to secure the capital funding needed to connect the ECWE to the airport. I'd also like to mention that the GTAA won the first ever Mississauga Tourism Resiliency Award, presented to us by the Mississauga Board of Trade at their annual Business Awards of Excellence event. This award is given to an organization that shows resilience throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, and we're very proud to be recognized for our efforts. As recovery continues, our focus remains on reuniting friends and family, bringing tourists to Canada, and contributing strongly to our hard-hit tourist industry. Finally, I'd encourage you to take a look at the article titled Investing in Airport Workers with Ontario Skill Development Fund. On April 28th, we welcomed Member of Provincial Parliament Deepak Anand to celebrate and recognize the awarding of $1.6 million from the Ontario Ministry of Labour, Training and Skills Development to create Toronto Pearson's first ever airport-wide job portal called Pearson Works Online. This job portal will support the recovery, reskilling and upskilling of the Toronto Pearson workforce, one of the country's most dynamic and multi-employer workplaces. I'd also like to mention that the need is so great, there are many available airport jobs. So we've set up a jobs portal that's now active on the Toronto Pearson website. We'll be sending out a link after this meeting, and I'd encourage everyone to promote the portal with their networks. These are the articles that stand out for me, but I do encourage everyone to take a look at the newsletter. Thank you so much for your time.
Great. Thanks so much, Perez. Any questions on any of the items that were highlighted by Perez or in the newsletter that you'd like to ask about? Councillor Fonseca, you've come on my screen. I didn't know that meant you had a question. No? Okay. Awesome. Well, then we're going to move forward. Thank you. And so the first item on our agenda is Toronto Pearson update, is on our challenges that we've been facing with respect to government agency resourcing and health measures that are still in place at the airport. I don't think, unless you're living under a rock right now, you've probably missed the media and the discussion by many people who are facing challenges, and either whether it's inbound as an international traveler or in terms of your outbound processing at CATSA. After 2 years of the airport being virtually shut down, Obviously, there's some pains in terms of us getting back up. We're tremendously pleased to see the recovery of air travel and the pent-up demand that people have and want to get on an airplane again. But there are some growing pains in terms of getting there. We're significantly, you know, concerned about the summer season, the traditional path for growth for us. As soon as school lets out is for people to want to get on planes. And so we are expecting to see a significant uptick in travel come at the end of June. And I know that Greg and Atul will focus on that. But it is an issue that we're talking to government about. We're also very much seized with the issue ourselves in terms of the measures that we need to be taking as an airport to make sure that everything that we can do is being done, and our partners as well. So with that, I want to introduce two folks who have been in this in front of our committee before. Greg Owen, who's the Associate Director of Government Agency Programs, and Atul Sharma, who's Manager of Government Affairs and Stakeholder Relations. And so over to you, and I think Atul, you're starting first.
That's correct. Thanks, Lori. I've got a couple of slides, so I'm just going to share those here. As Lori said, you know, this has been all over the media in the last little while, and it's an issue that we've been talking to the government about consistently, probably for the last 4 to 6 weeks, and have been really pushing them to pay attention to this and to say that we have had some progress in there. And so we will certainly talk about that as well. Just one sec here. Hopefully everyone can see the presentation. Great. So just a quick overview. Of course, you know that the Toronto Pearson, as well as other Canadian airports, are seeing a lot of major delays as a result of the COVID measures that have been put in place for border processing. You'll recall those measures were put in place at a time at the height of the pandemic when we had about 5,000 to 10,000 incoming passengers, international inbound passengers per day. And we were able to manage through with the process and made it work. Of course, now we've got about 35,000 passengers inbound every single day, and the process just doesn't work anymore. We have gone from about 15 seconds per border service officer to about 2 minutes per border service officer. So you can imagine what the impact of that is. Our customs hall has a certain capacity limit. So once we reach that, we have to move folks into the arrivals area before that, getting into the customs hall. And then once that fills up, we have to hold people on planes. So if you've traveled in the last little while, you may have actually gone through this experience yourself. And we believe and know that a lot of that is being caused by the process that is there right now. We have a number of duplicate questions that are being asked on the health side. So when you do your check-in for your flight, you get asked a number of questions. On ArriveCan, you get asked a number of questions. And then you're being asked again at the CBSA officer as well. So we are looking to the government to address the areas which they have responsibility for and ones in which they can move as quickly as possible. That includes government staffing shortages, streamlining the health process, and moving testing from within the airport to outside of the airport. While our testing number is about 1,900 per day, that still means that 35,000 people have to be vetted, so those 19,000 can be selected for random testing. So you can see on the last point there that we've put in some direct suggestions for the government to take a look at, including removing testing from airports, implementing a true trusted traveler program, and increasing the screening efficiency to reduce reject bags. So maybe just to take a little step back, of course, so the issue is both on the departure side and on the inbound arrival side. The testing and health-related questions are related to inbound travel, and we have had some issues with CATSA as well, where we've had 45 minutes to 60 minutes wait times for people who wanted to screen through CATSA. Or need to screen through CATSA. And we have been working very closely with the Transport Canada on that, and have in the last couple of weeks seen some improvement in that area. However, our concern is that as we get closer to the summer, that 35,000 passengers per day becomes 45,000 passengers. And the pace of change and improvements that we're seeing at CATSA could soon be overtaken by the increase in the number of passengers that we have. We've covered some of this off already. So just some of the operational impact on CATSA, you know, 45 to 60 minute wait times, especially during peak periods. We are part of a working group that was set up by the minister. Border processing. So we have about 100,000 passengers each week, which are being affected by a hold or a metering. So the hold is when they are kept on the plane at the gate, and the metering is that when they are allowed out in smaller groups into the customs hall. So 50% of the passengers every week are being affected by this process. And we talked about the fact that, you know, we are seeing 35,000 per day, but we still need to manually pick. So again, if you've gone through the process, you can see the border officers are there and they put a sticker, a manual sticker. They give you a paper sheet that tells you what your responsibilities are. And so this whole process is slowing down and causing a congestion within the customs hall. And so we are continuing to operate at about 50% traffic levels. And during the peak, we're actually higher than the 2019 levels just for those couple of hours during the peak period. So, you know, the physical structure of the airport hasn't changed. It's the process that's changed. And if you recall, in 2019, we had about 50.5 million passengers came through. 2020, about 13 million, and I think about 12.5 in 2021. So we're, as Laurie said, you know, we're happy to see the return of passengers, but we need to relook at the processes that we have to ensure that they're keeping up with the change in the passenger growth. I'm going to turn it over to Greg to talk about some of our discussions that we've been having.
Yeah, good afternoon, everybody, and great to see some faces here that I haven't seen in a while. Just to put a little bit more context around, you know, what has occurred, you know, if as Atul said, when you go back to February of 2020 and we're running an airport that's seeing about 50 million passengers a year, there were days in May of 2020 when we had 300 passengers a day go to the United States. Whereas 2 months before that, we were seeing 20 to 25,000 passengers a day go to the United States. And now we're back to a place where we're seeing, you know, 10, 12, 15,000 passengers a day go to the United States. So there's been quite a huge, you know, a very deep decline at the beginning, which lasted for us for about 18 months. And then, you know, a very bumpy return to traffic, which included, you know, Omicron in January. So, you know, we have been working with our government agencies for the past 2 years on restart and recovery. And it has been, as you can imagine, quite up and down as we've moved through various stages of COVID. And the other thing I think it's important to keep in mind, and I do think our agencies are responding, is like every other entity at the airport, there were huge impact to employment. And, you know, we in the summer of 2020, we were at about 25% of the pre-COVID employment at Pearson. So where we had employed, you know, almost 50,000 people before COVID, you know, that was cut to 25%. And so that recovery also includes getting people back into jobs. And that has been a big piece, particularly for CATSA. So as Atul mentioned, there's a lot of work being done at the headquarters level by Laurie and others to get changes to the way the operations are run. And as you can imagine, that is a long, slow process, but we keep chipping away at it. And I would say that, you know, at this point, we continue to, you know, play what I would see call a game of inches as we look to get ready for and bring back additional travel. Every week is getting better, but it is a challenge. And we certainly had some challenges this past spring And even this, the issue we saw on Sunday, that if for those of you who follow social media would have seen, you know, that was a result of not only the border processing times, but we also had some equipment and baggage issues, which affected the ability to move passengers. So, as you know, big facility, there's a lot happening there. In terms of CATSA, just to give you where we're at, about 200 additional screening officers came in during the month of May. Another 100 are coming in over the month of June. And by the end of June, we should be back to a pre-COVID number of screening officers, which will help improve CATSA's throughput. It's enabled us to have additional lanes, and it's enabled us to also help passengers understand what it takes to travel again, because we have seen, you know, challenges with people not necessarily being ready to fly, and that requires a longer search time. That is getting better, but recognize as well that there's a lot of new people who are coming in, and so there's a big training component from CATSA, and unfortunately that takes a bit of time for them to get back up to speed to be processing at the same rates as they were before. But as Atul said, we're very focused on making those improvements alongside them. In the case of CBSA, every year we get approximately 175 summer border services officers, which come in from universities and colleges. So they're pretty much on our port now and will be by the end of June at 100%. Officers that were deployed to other parts of the CBSA, you know, while air traffic for passengers went down, cargo went up. And so officers had to be redeployed to cargo. And at the same point in time, they closed the college that was producing between 300 and 600 border services officers a year because of COVID. So that's restarted, but there's a shortage in the pipeline of full-time officers. We are, you know, a top priority for them in terms of deploying full-time officers, and that continues. We're also in the process of bringing more technology into the facility. For those of you who have cleared through, you know, we have primary inspection kiosks now in both terminals, and so we're putting more of them into Terminal 1, and we are also bringing on board the first e-gates in Canada to help process passengers faster. So for those of you who might have flown to the UK or the EU in previous years, you could process on an e-gate. We're now the first airport in the country that will have those as well, and they're coming fully online as we get through June. And we will continue to bring those in over the coming months and years to both terminals. You know, the last thing I'll just flag on here is there's going to be a great technology improvement that starts at the end of June, which is that you will have the opportunity to do your customs declaration in advance at the same point in time as you do arrive can. And that reduces your processing time by about 50%. So we expect to see, particularly with the support of the airlines, that passengers begin to do that, and that will improve the time that they have to spend with technology before they see an officer. And then in the case of USCBP, their processing time has changed with us. Previously, we would have expected a passenger to get through in 30 minutes or less. But as a result of the redeployment of officers back to the United States, that target time is now closer to 45 minutes and can hit 60 minutes on very challenging days. But we have been successful in getting temporary duty officers deployed from other ports, and a significant increase in their budget for overtime, and more officers coming on permanently as we move through the summer. So, you know, as Atul mentioned as well, the processing time with an officer continues to get faster, but it's not at what it was pre-COVID. Typically, we would expect 15 to 30 seconds for the vast majority of travelers with a CBSA officer, a Canadian citizen returning who has nothing to declare. But if not everything is in order, that processing time goes up and requires more time with an officer, particularly when you add the need to be vaccinated or the need to have your arrive can complete and it's not done, then that can take up officers' time as well. We can hit the next slide there. We have a video to show you that just gives you a little bit of sense of what advanced declaration looks like. And it is on an e-gate here. This is in our lab, which has now been moved out to the floor and went into trial late last week. But showing the speed of somebody who has done their declaration in advance, what you'll see is somebody in trial here, confirming their language, swiping their passport, having their picture taken, and confirming that the declaration they've already made enables them to pass through this e-gate and see an officer. So you'll just see how fast it gets now. So a normal kiosk time transaction is between 2 and 3 minutes, and this takes the transaction time ideally down to under a minute. So the more passengers we get to do this, the faster and more capacity we'll have through our facility. And that's available not only on the e-gates, but it is also available on and all the kiosks we have in Canada Border Services, which at this point will number about 200 kiosks by the end of June. And so, you know, as Atul touched on earlier, you know, focus with all of our agencies on increasing their staffing and taking the opportunity to do things like suspending people who are selected for mandatory random testing during peak times of the day, getting our processing times down to what they were pre-COVID. And we have the commitment from the CBSA that they're working to get to that as well. Getting rid of the vaccination mandate for both workers and travelers, which is a big move and will allow us to get individuals back to work for those who are not vaccinated. And then getting us back to the pre-COVID service standards, which, you know, ideally CATSA, we clear 85% of passengers in 15 minutes or less at all hours of the day. And CBSA gets 90% of passengers through in 20 minutes or less. So, you know, there's a lot of work to still be done. We've made a lot of progress since last year, but as Atul said, there's a lot of work going on to get ready for the summer and what that will bring. So I think that covers our deck, and if anybody has any questions, then we'd do our best to answer them for you.
Brad.
I did catch a clip of Minister Al Gobber today. I think he was either going into question period or leaving question period. He seemed to suggest that one of the reasons for the backlogs is because the scheduling of international flights, there are too many flights scheduled to arrive at the same time, and that's creating a backlog. Can you guys react to that? Like, I don't know, but I did hear that clip. And if that's the message getting out there, then it becomes a GTAA problem, which really it isn't, I don't think. I think it's the agencies that are understaffed that has led to this problem, generally speaking. But can you react to that? I mean, are there just too many international flights arriving in a short window, trying to pigeonhole way too many passengers through with the reduced capacity? Or is the minister playing a little fast and loose?
Yeah, Brad, that's a great question. I wouldn't necessarily say the minister is playing fast and loose. But I would say is that airlines have historical slots that we have to protect for them because of the airport we are and our place in the world. And so airports have the ability to maintain and keep those slots post-COVID, even though they weren't necessarily operating them. Those slots get filed for the summer schedule. They got filed in January. So the aircraft that they file for the summer, we get 6 months ahead of time. So the peaks, you know, so those flights operated historically previous to COVID-19. And so we protected them and enabled those airlines to restart their operations with the same flights. But what it does mean is particularly in the afternoon, starting at about 1 o'clock in the afternoon till about 9 o'clock at night, is we have very heavy passenger volumes. And you have very large aircraft coming in on that point in time. So in addition to the large volumes of passengers coming, other things can affect that, like weather. Does the flight land on time? If the flight doesn't land on time and lands later, that then pushes that load into the next hour or the hour after that. So It is a very complex system right now, particularly related to that. And I would say that the fact that the processing time does take longer, that does contribute to that as well. So it's a multitude of factors that is contributing to that.
I see Stephen has his hand up. Brad, sorry, did that answer your question before we move on?
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. I just wanted the reaction to what he said, and I think that was a good answer, Greg. Thank you.
Thanks, Brad.
Hi, Greg. I'll go ahead if that's okay, Michael.
Yeah, of
course. I mean, it's unfortunate Lori stepped out a minute ago. I had significant questions for her on this file, but I know that you're handling more of the technical end. There's a couple of things that I think that the Toronto Airport Workers Council really think need to be communicated to the public better, and we have concerns as well. First of all, is what is the impact of not being able to process people either at the border or through security screening, and the cascading effects that has on airport operations, because a plane's put on hold, then baggage gets backed up in another area and people are moved around, and it just creates chaos. And I think that's not necessarily being communicated very well, that when you have a problem, so even if it's significant in one area of operations, it cascades through the entire system. And that's what's happened. We dispute a couple of things maybe, or might want to challenge a couple of things in your narrative that we've been looking at. First of all, CBSA was cutting back on border processing agents before COVID. And you even mentioned that the idea of closure of the school. And so you've had 2 years where, of course, labor supply was not an issue. But then we did know that this was going to end. I mean, we predicted this at the Airport Workers Council 2 years ago in a meeting with Deborah Flint. We said, you will have labor shortages during recovery because people will exit the sector. And this was well known. And it was agreed upon. And then we hear that you're only having these conversations where I guess it might be Minister Mendocino. I don't know who else Lori is talking to. That's one of the questions I wanted to ask. Well, who is, and only did this 4 to 6 weeks ago? I mean, this is a problem that was identified 2.5 years ago. We knew this was going to happen. And I'm a little bit disappointed to hear that things are only being brought to the forefront and pressures being put on government to increase staffing. I mean, right now, CBSA agents are working unhealthy and unsustainable amounts of overtime. Okay, we're talking about people who are going to be off sick because of overwork. So I think that's really important that you really get out in front and talk about that this might have been a foreseeable problem, and it was by many folks, and perhaps maybe some folks that could have been listened to earlier on in the process and who have been making statements to Mendocino could have a play a role in this process. You didn't mention, for example, your labor partners once in the discussion, and labor shortage is something that labor unions have dealt with in the past. So this is something that I just really want to make noted for the consultative committee today. I might have more to say on it later, and I do have some harder questions for Lori, but maybe if she returns, I'll ask then. Thank you very much.
Yeah, maybe I'm happy to, Stephen, to give you a little bit of background in terms of some of our discussions. Like, we are definitely having conversations with all of our agency partners and stakeholders within the industry, but also directly with, Health Canada, Public Safety, and with Transport Canada. Yes, I think I had mentioned that it was 4 to 6 weeks. That has been the intense part of the discussions in terms of like trying to raise the flag and, you know, put out the warning. But we have had continuous discussion, as Greg said, for the past 2 years on recovery for the airport. So those relationships are there. And as you know, the government has established a couple of working groups, and we are participating in those on a daily basis to look at concrete ideas on how to move forward on these critical issues.
Okay, thank you very much. one thing I will add too is I think you should be very wary about the technical fixes to this problem. The idea that you're going to get new machinery, new advanced declaration technologies to fix this problem. Will they improve it? Probably. But there's also research that we've done, and one of the complaints that workers have had and PSAC and CIU is that the technology was so outdated compared to other airports on the world around the world that this was slowing times. In fact, the technology that we've been using until very recently, it's slower than human processing times.
Yeah, and those are great.
And that's something we have to be wary about. It's going to take time to implement these two technologies. You have to educate the passengers. And you could have a case for a number of months or even years where humans can process these faster than the machines. So I don't think that the technical fixes are necessarily something that's going to happen quickly.
Yeah, I appreciate that feedback, Stephen. That's great feedback for us. We're very conscious of it as well, and that's why we focus on ensuring and requesting staffing to support the pressures in the airport. Recognize that they are not our employees, and nor is the technology our technology. We're required to put in the equipment, but it's actually a Canada Border Services or CATSA or USCBP run back-end systems. So we have ongoing work with them on how we can get it faster and get it improved. Ultimately, it's for us to influence them to move things in a better direction, both on technology as well as with bringing people to the table. And absolutely, having border services officers and CATSA screening officers is the number one way we're going to move people through.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and I would only add, you know, we are picking up a lot of the messaging that you're talking about. We do pick up in our advocacy efforts, and I've seen letters go out with very similar messaging, how it's a system-wide impact, not only at the airport, at Pearson proper, but if there's delays at Pearson, it's really spread across the entire definitely Canadian aviation system, even globally, right? So that's the messaging there, and that it should, this is a problem that we could all see coming. And so that's something we use when we're out advocating, and we've documented in writing, you know, this is a problem that we all saw in advance. And but then you have to look forward, right? It's one thing to say we could all see the problem coming, but what's now we have to work on solutions, right? So you've put forward a couple good ideas. I know there's a regular forum. I think there's a regular forum that you have with Pearson and with the community relations group. So, you know, I'd encourage you to raise it there. But I'll bring it back internally as well.
Hey, thank you, Michael. I'll speak more to this when we have more to this and we have to go around. Maybe Lori will be back. Hey, thanks.
Sure.
Hey, it's Savik here. I just have a thought or a comment, if you don't mind.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I would only say, Steve, you know, before we move on from Steve, Atul, you know, Atul runs our federal outreach. He's with Lori. I mean, they just came back from Ottawa. I'd encourage you. He's quite capable. And Greg is on the ground and owns our agency relationship. So, I mean, no need to hold off.
All right. Well, then I'll ask one quick question. Did you approach at any time any of the unions of Pearson to accompany you to have a visit with Minister Mendocino or another federal minister on this question?
I don't know what to do.
So we have been talking primarily with staff and haven't had the conversations directly with the ministers as of yet. But that's a great idea, and certainly okay. We can take it back and consider that. So.
I think strategically reaching out to some of the unions, especially PSAC, to have them join you in those meetings as a strategy and not leave them on the outside might be beneficial. I mean, after all, it's the workers at Pearson that are taking the abuse from passengers. The fact that we're calling for more security at Pearson because of the threats of violence that members are facing at Pearson due to the delays. So I think actively bringing in unions and union leaders, elected leaders who are also writing letters and lobbying on the same issue and working together is something, and not having Pearson and GTAA just doing this on a one-on-one or airport industry doing it one-on-one, you might find a little bit more power. After all, There's only so many votes that airports have, but airport workers have a lot more.
Yeah.
That's a great point, and we'll follow up with you on that.
And actually, it's a good segue. I know we're not going to segue right away, but we've been going through a bit of a why Pearson matters exercise and really trying to broaden the voice. When we go out and do government relations, to your point, Stephen, it makes more sense to have more voices in the room, and government response to that. Frankly, I'm tired of hearing my own voice, so it'd be nice to have business at the table, like you said, have unions, have other folks that say, hey, this matters to more than just the airport. So, well, Eileen's going to present on that, and maybe the conversation comes full circle.
So, Michael, I think there was someone on the phone that had
yes,
a comment.
Abbott, so.
Sorry. Yeah. I just had one thought here, and it's a comment, and thanks, Stephen, for your questions and the presentation, guys. You know, I hear the logistics issue, and, you know, 200 or 300 CBSA office is not going to make anything move any faster. And I think looking at the slot issues, that's how the business is run. I think this government has an issue where they're pointing fingers at everything but themselves for a solution. And I'll tell you, I'm very, very concerned that by July and August, it doesn't get better because the travel increases in July and August. And the increase is not proportional to the people that you're putting on the ground. And I agree with Stephen, technology is not necessarily going to work, as proven with the app and all the other pieces of duplicate, triplicate type of reviews that are going on. Anyway, that's my thought. I'll leave it at that. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
I don't know, Greg, do you want to comment?
Well, I appreciate the feedback and sharing that as well with the federal government. You know, certainly appreciate anything you wish to do on that as well. And, you know, we'll continue to take that feedback ourselves and pass that up the line that's the thoughts as well as our partners at the airport and from our consultative committee.
Yeah. And I would just, and, you know, I see another hand, but I would just say when we are out advocating, we really, I'm thinking about it in a three-pronged way, right? We're not only talking about technological solutions, we're talking about tech, we're talking about increased staffing, and we're talking about process improvements, right? So there is some low-hanging fruit. I'm sure Greg could give you a 30-minute dissertation on process improvements alone. And the ones that we've identified are there's duplicate screening questions. People shouldn't be asked the same questions three times in a row. And there is testing in the airport that is taking up a significant physical footprint that needs to leave the airport and perhaps take place in the community. And that would, Atul talked about it. Right now we're vetting all international arriving passengers to select 2,000 people for random testing. So that's kind of three things, tech, staffing, process improvements that we're talking about. I see another, sorry, I can't see all the hands up. I see a hand up.
Suzanne.
Oh, Suzanne. Perfect.
Hi there. Apologies for not putting my camera on. It's a Wi-Fi thing. I'm Suzanne Acton-Gervais with the National Airlines Council of Canada. So I'm a resource. So I don't know if it's okay if I speak now.
That's of course.
Acceptable.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, no, great, great conversation and a great segue into why Pearson matters, because of course this all matters to our businesses, but to the travel experience workers and to Canada's reputation. I think we've talked about that throughout the discussions today. One of the things I want to mention is, and to the mention of slots, so, you know, the reality is, we appreciate the and welcome the additional resources and, of course, the kiosks. And the reality is passengers are likely to continue experiencing these backlogs. And again, mentioning the process times, the elimination of mandatory random testing for connecting flights was a good step. That was something that came in on June 1st. However, we are hearing of some ongoing concerns with that, but that's for another venue. But the continuation of legacy pandemic era public health restrictions is really, really the main cork in the system. That's, you know, we have been working hand in hand with the government and, you know, with our airport colleagues, with other stakeholders, with the government partners for over 2 years. And we've implemented them, and we're looking at what is remaining in place. And it's in our view, it will continue to create bottlenecks for travelers, unfortunately. What we've done in implementing these measures for over the last 2 years, it was always done in an effort to work as a partnership to mitigate the importation and spread of COVID-19 based on the latest science and evidence, particularly in the early stages of the COVID-19 pandemic, to keep Canadians safe and, of course, to keep workers and travelers safe. But 2.5 years later, there are things we know now that we didn't know before, and we know that the transmission of COVID-19 resulting from air travel is exceptionally low, less than 1%, and yet these measures continue. And so the fact of the matter is, still today, we're the only industry with these restrictions still in place, and they're no longer supported by data, and it is hampering the travel experience. So when it comes to airport backlogs, the processing times, and I know Greg is and Atul, you know, they're very well versed in this facilitation part, but they have increased significantly. It is following the implementation of these pandemic era public health measures. We know that over 50 countries have dropped them altogether. So that, coupled with the resource issues at airports and the resumption of more frequent travel, this is what has created the bottlenecks in our view. Really, it's simple. It's the theory of constraints. When you slow down the processes, you have consequences. So I'll just stop there, and I really appreciate the opportunity to provide those inputs.
That's great. Thank you.
Yeah. Any other questions for Atul and Greg while we have them? Seeing none. Gentlemen, thanks. I thought that was a great presentation, and we'll probably call you back in a month's time for an update.
Thanks for the questions and the feedback. Really appreciate it.
It's great. Thank you very much. Thanks.
Thank you.
So we're going to move to, I mentioned, so my colleague Eileen Wader, who probably needs no introduction for many of you, but I will let her introduce herself in a second. But we've been going through, I would say, a bit of an exercise at Pearson called Why Pearson Matters, for lack of a better term. And it's, if I had to think high level, what is the exercise all about? It's really asking key stakeholders, you know, government, business, the community, what does the airport mean to you? Why does it matter to you? But beyond that, what can we be doing better? How can we be helping you grow your business? How can we be helping the community in terms of investment and otherwise, and just working better with government? So I'll hand it over to Eileen, and she can take you through a bit of a deck and the program.
Thanks, Michael. First of all, because I can't see anybody anymore, I can see you, Michael. Can you give me a thumbs up if the screen is up? All right. Thank you. So thanks to the committee for taking the time to hear some more about some research that we're doing. As Michael said about why Pearson matters, I'll begin with a bit of an overview of the Discovery Work Program. Oops. I can no longer see the presentation, but I'm hoping you can.
I can, yeah.
Okay. All right. I'll begin with an overview of the Discovery Work Program, and then I'll get into some of the early results, and some of the components are still underway. So as we see the beginning of the recovery for the sector, we're turning our minds to the planning of the future of Toronto Pearson. And this includes engaging and having conversations with stakeholders and communities to better understand why the airport matters to them. And that will help us, it will inform an updated strategy and a capital investment program for us ultimately. And we're going to do that. I'm going to share a bit about the framework, but we've bucketed the discovery work into three main areas. And it doesn't; these aren't exhaustive or exclusive at all, but ways to capture this. So the government, key government staff, understand their views on the relationship and how airport can further support business, that's industry and civic leaders, many of whom are seated around the table here today. I want to learn how Pearson matters to their competitiveness and how the airport could further support that. And the community, that's our neighbors, our residents, our community partners, airport workers, passengers, and I know I'll preempt Stephen's question for me later, that would include labor as well, but as well, we also view labor as participating, you know, through the industry and civic leader lens as well. Perspectives and feedback from these conversations will, as I said earlier, ultimately inform our strategic planning exercise and things that we do around engagement, advocacy, communications, etc. And so we hope to glean opportunities to enhance Pearson's value proposition from this effort. Okay, does the slide advance? No. Sorry, guys, I'm just having trouble. One sec here. There we go. Okay, so conversations with government. The government relations team and some of their consultants had conversations with some 25 to 30 staff at all three levels. This was back in March, so obviously as the challenges with the operation continue to grow, obviously there would have been more to talk to them about, even though, as noted by Michael Latul and Greg earlier, we've been having these conversations constantly for the past 2 years through the pandemic about what happens and how do we prepare for recovery. And we all know government will take lots of meetings to listen to questions, but getting to action sometimes is a different story. But I digress from what I'm here to talk about. So government definitely does recognize the importance. It was clear that the importance of Pearson and the role it plays as a key international hub has landed with them and is still of great importance to them. And we also heard about transit, which I know this committee has spent a lot of time working through and are happy to hear about more. And it was gratifying to hear, and I'm sure my government relations colleagues are happy to hear that that the relationships that GTA has with staff at government are pretty strong. But one of the challenges that we face, and particularly for the feds, is that you know, airport recovery is simply counted upon in much the same way that they, well, you know, that they're saying they understand the economic importance. They're also seem to be feeling comfortable that as the economic recovery comes, recovery for us will happen as well. And we can, and we've just finished a conversation about why it's not as simple as that. And in terms of the province, they're often looking because they well understand our federal jurisdiction aspects, and they're always looking first to see what government is bringing to the table and wanting to make sure that government is federal government is participating as well. But for us, in terms of thinking forward, supply chain resilience remains top of mind, still a very big conversation out there. And there's a lot of eagerness to see how the aviation sector can be more sustainable. So we look forward to continuing conversations with government on that. I would just ask, and I don't know if Atul's still on the line because I can't see the screen, but if Atul or Michael have any other things they would like to add to this summary.
I can't see if Atul, oh yeah, Atul is there. I have nothing to add. I think that covers it. You covered it.
Okay. Comprehensively. Okay.
Yes. Agreed, Eileen. I think you've covered it all.
All right. So then we moved on to business stakeholders, and we had several direct conversations with key businesses that operate around the airport, as well as had some virtual roundtable sessions with business leaders from the employment zone around the airport, which we as this group know as the airport employment zone, but it went even broader than that, extended the halo of the employment zone beyond that to large employers with whom we hadn't engaged before and wanted to hear from. That also included business leaders from the advanced manufacturing sector and supply chain and logistics sectors. And the heads of the Board of Trade were also sitting in on some of those conversations as well. So Trevor, you have had an opportunity to weigh in one venue. And so we did hear about, you know, our basic value proposition is still strong in the sense that it's still valued for access and reliability. But the we did also hear loud and clear about how the current state of that is leading to some concerns about the will, the appearance of Canada not being as welcoming as it could be for the return of business. So we clearly need to fix the experience of traveling through Pearson at present. I won't go in, further on that. There were conversations on that, but we've well exhausted that in the previous presentation. But this leaves a perception that Canada is really not welcoming, and we want to make sure on behalf of all of you and on behalf of many others that we get through this quickly. It was interesting to me to hear that the return of direct passenger flights was important to the cost competitiveness of cargo. Although I've been here for some years and I well understand how much of the cargo flies in the belly of passenger aircraft, I hadn't made that link necessarily between the cost competitiveness aspect and the price going up, although it's basic economics and, you know, as capacity is scarce, prices go up. As the rail and marine modes started to experience more disruption, in fact, that disruption was already starting pre-pandemic, air cargo is going to be increasingly relied on and looked upon for supply chain stability. We heard about the importance of our global access that we previously had through the reach that we had, same day service to some 80% of the world's economy in 2019. It's important for business development, investment attraction, and recruitment of talent. And here in the middle of this slide, you see one of our favorite quotes. You don't write $20 million checks to people you've never met. You can do all the pre-work in a deal and discovery work in a leading up to a deal that you'd like in a virtual environment. But ultimately, you're going to want to meet that person that you're investing in, or go and see and touch the piece of equipment that you're about to invest in. So that was gratifying to hear that there will still be a need for business travel. We also heard that Pearson plays an important role in the healthcare system, something also I hadn't thought about before. So access to Northern Ontario has been critical to delivering healthcare services. Life Labs was participating at one of our roundtables and mentioned how often they are flying samples from the north to the south because the certain lab technologies are not available in Northern Ontario. And post-secondary institutions as well rely on global connectivity, and we heard from some of those. I'm sure some folks on the call here today would agree that they are an important part of the talent pipeline for the future. So initially in bringing in students, in encouraging students to make that decision to come to Canada and train and become certified, et cetera. But then ongoing to keep them here, let them build careers here, but still be able to stay in touch with friends and family around the world. I'm gonna hold on this next quote, but I love it. You can track a pizza to our door, but we can't easily track through a package from Frankfurt to Pearson. And I'll touch on that a bit more on the next slide, but really there was a lot of requests for improving the service for the delivery of goods through the airport. And so then we asked them to start looking about the future. Leadership and advocacy, thinking about how we build back, hackneyed phrase, build back better, one of our pandemic lingo that we've picked up. But what could, as we're thinking about the airport of the future, let's not let this good crisis go to waste. So let's think about things that we could do differently. And there was clearly an expectation, and it was repeated in many of the conversations we have, that Pearson would continue to play a significant leadership role, that we should play a convening role across sectors to help champion a vision for the economic development and prosperity of the region. Employers in the airport employment zone in particular, who've had some experience with us in working on things like transit, want to continue that, expand that, somebody even said, you know, we're the second largest employment zone in the country. Why can't we work together to turn this into the single largest employment zone in the country? So a lot of excitement and appetite as people are dying to think about the future. But it was very interesting to hear how much they would like to look to Pearson. Someone called us the big kid on the block to fight together, not only to advocate with what's going on, because as I mentioned, they did talk about the current experience, but also to build bold visions for the future. And so then they got into talking about us taking the lead on advancing new technologies and sustainability, not only for moving people, also for moving goods. So some of the things around sustainability, journey to net zero, with potentially having some pilots at the airport around autonomous vehicles, electric vehicles, or different energy sources. So we've had some conversations with some folks around hydrogen as an example. So making this airport a living lab. So why can't the airport, which has a front door to the globe, be also the place that demonstrates the innovation and the technology improvements that could be showcased here with local talent and local businesses? So that's it for the business conversations. And, you know, we will continue them. And clearly we're having conversations with government and business all the time. The difference with those conversations was that we cast the net wider to folks we hadn't previously spoken with before. We have relationships with passengers. We have relationships with partners that deliver and support delivery of services at the airport. We don't necessarily have relationships with those ultimate end users of, from a business perspective, of the service that gets delivered here and the connectivity that it provides. So that was a new step forward in that direction, and one that we will continue to work to expand. Something else that is just beginning to become underway: conversations with community. So this component of the public work will want to. We want to understand what the expectations of the public are, and that includes the public is very broadly defined, expectations of the airport and what aspirations they have for not only the airport, but the GTA as a company that runs the airport. And so the first step of that will be a survey. It's open now, and it will close June 17th. And it really is to sort of have a conversation about community values. You see here some two broad questions that will be examined through the survey and through the second step, which will be a convening of a reference panel. All of this will help to inform some of the value proposition for the airport writ large as we think about an updated strategy and through to an updated capital plan. The reference panel, you can, as you complete the survey, you can elect to be included in a lottery to join a reference panel. It'll happen on July 9th, and that'll be 24 folks. We've done this before in the Noise Forum and Noise Arena pre-pandemic, and it worked very well. And it will bring together 24 volunteers for a day-long workshop to chew through the survey results and some of the and start to make sure we understand more fully more about question two, how Pearson can help everyone achieve a more fulfilling and connected, prosperous life, and not to forget our net zero path. So a link will be sent out after today's conversation. We encourage all of you to participate in the survey, and please feel free to share the link with whomever. The more we hear from, the better we'll be off in terms of understanding what communities, which include neighbors, airport workers, airport partners, airport employers, the net will be cast very wide here. And obviously, government staff and business stakeholders who have previously participated in other parts of the exercise could join on this too. And so now a question for you. So this group here is comprised of civic leaders of industry, representatives of labor, of workers, et cetera. So pretty broad spectrum. And we'd also like to hear from you specifically about how Pearson can serve as a competitive advantage for your constituency, community, industry, members, residents. What does Pearson matter now? But going forward, how could it further support the competitiveness of all of these things? What would a stronger, more robust airport be? And how could it bring prosperity and success? And so a second survey link will also be shared with you following this meeting, about 10 to 15 minutes to answer some questions that are around these two broad questions bring us some insights for what the value proposition for business and civic leaders and civic organizations would like to share with us as we plan forward. So that concludes the presentation. And I can answer any questions about any of the components and those that I can't answer because I don't lead all of the delivery of them. I will certainly endeavor to come back with a response to share. And if it's all right, I will stop sharing my screen so I can see faces.
Sure. I see Sabir has a question for you, Eileen.
Hi, Sabir.
Eileen, nice to see you and excellent presentation. And I'm glad, Eileen, you did a consultation with the business because I think that was just one missing element there. And mm-hmm. you rightly pointed out that there's so much cargo that is under the belly of an aircraft. And I think from our regional perspective, we do want, and from City of Mississauga perspective as well, we want to provide that excellent access to the airport. So anything that we can do, and I think we also need to get that broader input from the businesses as well. And I'm glad you did that. So if we can give a little bit more publicity or at least disseminate that information to wider audience, that would be excellent.
Okay, thank you, Sabir. Firstly, I'd say that yes, we've had the challenge of the reduction in passenger traffic and therefore the belly capacity, but we've also had the addition of, and we've seen some growth in freighter activity, some of it which was to respond to the immediate urgency to replace that belly capacity for pandemic and urgent needs. But we're thinking it's going to be a bit of a growing trend, obviously not to the degree it's been in the response. But writ large, there's been some structural changes happening, not only on the demand side with e-commerce and et cetera. And I'm sure Eileen, the other Eileen in the call, could spend a lot more time talking about this than I, but as well on the capacity side. So we are thinking about and working toward making some infrastructure investment requests to the federal government to help us meet that increasing demand on airport. And then finally, the digitalization aspect of it. Anyone who spent any time in the cargo arena, we're outside of a fully integrated operation where there's much better line of sight to what's happening. That quote about Frankfurt and pizza to your door is quite telling and I think quite descriptive of the majority of how cargo moves. And then to your second comment about the business, really that's, you know, other than engagement with direct partners or through organizations such as the boards of trade that do represent a wide variety of business interests and are always helpful in helping us garner some insights, this is the first time we've really gone to that next step and did some, I'll call it cold calling, to identify some folks that we haven't talked to before. And we'd like to continue that as part of an ongoing and growing program. So yes, the more we can share about the fact of our interest in doing that, the better. So the roadshow is just beginning.
Yeah, so thank you, Eileen, for a detailed answer. That's excellent because I know our regional council and our councillor for Senka is here. And you are participating in RPL Goods Movement Task Force as well as Mississauga Board of Trade. So Brad Butt has also participated in our task force. So this is excellent. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Does anyone else have questions for Eileen? I don't see anyone with their hand up. I'll give folks a minute. Eileen did mention we'll circulate a survey following the meeting, and I'd encourage everyone to fill it out. Hopefully we get 100% participation from the consultative committee. We definitely rely on your feedback as knowledgeable about airport operations and everything we discuss at the committee, and just look for your candid feedback. I think we can kind of grow and change as an organization when we're exposed to maybe sometimes difficult feedback. So happy to hear whatever you have to tell us.
So thank you, Michael, for making that last point, because it really is like, tell us the good, the bad, and the ugly, right? You know, and we're seeing some of the ugly. We're all watching it, but also tell us, you know, maybe cast your minds back pre-pandemic about some of the hopes and dreams or things you wish we would have been contemplating more directly as we start to turn our eye to recovery and restoring of growth. So. And in addition to the survey directly focusing on the consultative committee feedback, we will also send the link to the community survey, the broader survey, and feel free to respond as both a member of the public and a representative of your interests on the committee, please.
Fantastic. Thank you, Eileen. I think what we typically do at the end of the meeting is just a roundtable, and everyone updates on what's going on with your particular organization. So I have a list of everyone on the side of my screen, so maybe I'll just work top to bottom, if that's okay with everyone. And I see Eileen, Lucy, you're first.
Thank you, Michael.
Sure.
Can you hear me all right? Okay, good. Hi, everyone. Good to see you all. I've got just a few notes on some upcoming events with the Toronto Board of Trade that might be of interest to you all. So June 23rd is the first date, and that's for the annual Toronto Board of Trade luncheon with Mayor John Tory. So that's one for the diary, and registration is open now. The following day, June 24th, there will be the release of the Green Ribbon Fund report on creating a clean, kind of balancing sustainability and economic growth will be the theme of that as we look towards a clean energy transition. And then the final one that I wanted to share was for a June 28th summer social, which will be the last that the Toronto Board of Trade will be hosting in their current offices before they relocate. So that's at 4 p.m. on June 28th. So just three upcoming in-person events.
Great. I know we plan to be at most of those. I think we have a table, planning to have a table at the June 23rd event. So thanks for that. Where are they moving to? Where's the new offices? Do you know?
I don't know the exact address, but they'll be down by the waterfront in one of the new kind of industrialized parts of the Toronto waterfront.
Oh, perfect. Thank you. Next, I see Alessandra Bianchi.
Hi, everyone. No updates on our end for today.
Okay, that's easy. Over to Mr. Butt.
I think, as I mentioned before, we had a very successful State of the City address from Mayor Crombie today, and she had certainly positive comments to say about Toronto Pearson Airport and the importance of the airport to Mississauga's economy, which we all agree is absolutely, absolutely crucial. We're starting to get into what I would call the summer time frame. So I wouldn't say we have a significant number of events, you know, between now and after Labor Day to share with the group. But we have a couple of webinars and stuff coming up. But beyond that, I think things are good. And thanks again for including us in this meeting.
Fantastic. Councillor Fonseca, do you want to add to that? Oh, you're on mute.
Thank you. No, still doing that after all these thousands of meetings. I'll just echo what Brad was saying with regards to great to see you at the GTA at the mayor's address today. And yes, and the importance and the call out and the importance of everyone collaborating and coordinating together to ensure a strong economy and the many, many jobs. I know that the airport The airport, not only right now, but moving forward into the future, will be offering, but connecting the community with transportation as well. That was raised by the mayor. As far as you know, it's a municipal election year, so we've just come out of the provincial election, and now for the fall, for October, is the municipal election. So I'm not sure typically the GTA would present at regional and city council. I don't know if you'll be doing it for the end of this term of council, but we would expect to see you, I guess it would be maybe in the fall or in the start of the new term of council. And other than that, I just want to say a big thank you again, and I've already reiterated this with regards to the communications through the newsletter, but also just on the and specifically on the way you've communicated in so many ways on the runway, all of the construction on the runways and how that's gotten out through to the community in advance. Just a big thank you again on that. And yeah.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, just on the runway rehab, well, I'll just respond to a couple points. So the runway rehab, we're planning to give a project update. We typically do noise forms. I know, Councillor Fonseca, you've been part of the CNAC noise forms in the past, and now we have a public meeting. There is a community roundtable and an elected officials briefing. And so we're planning to give an ad hoc noise form update on the runway rehab project. So I'd encourage people to attend. That's late June. You just, the invite should be going out shortly. The nominators meetings, so we do annual updates to regional councils that nominate to our board. And you're right, because municipal election will probably be a bit delayed this year. I imagine they'll take place after the elections. Maybe we'll get some in before, but we're currently, I mean, we're almost in an election period now, would you say? Or I guess once filing ends in August, is that?
Yeah, the deadline for filing is August 19th, I believe. So there might be an opportunity, but if not, to present at councils, municipal councils, maybe it would happen in the fall or the new year, so.
And one thing we did bring up, actually, that jogged my memory. We've been talking internally about presenting to Mississauga Council directly. I know it's not something we've done in the past, but given the airport's in Mississauga, maybe that's something we can discuss, or I can discuss with you, you know, offline. And absolutely great presentation today from the mayor, and really incredible. I don't know why I'm surprised, but I'm often surprised to see the exponential growth that Mississauga is going through and that it will grow through, and how I thought the mayor did an excellent job of just piecing together how the airport fits into that. So hopefully we can take that feedback back. Thank you. Christopher Brodkin. Any updates?
I'm still relatively new, so I'm happy to turn it over to Amanda, but nothing from me. Thank you.
Okay. No problem.
Hi there. Over to you, Amanda. Thank you. So I was, I apologize for missing it earlier. My Wi-Fi was ducking out at that time. So Chris briefly introduced himself, but I just wanted to, that was my main update. For the coordination policy branch, Chris is our new regional manager for the Ontario region for TC. He's joined. I don't know if he brought this up, but he is joining us from Natural Resources Canada and was previously working in TC's air policy branch, supporting the CATSA commercialization file. I'm still going to be the resource member for this consultative committee meeting, but I thought it would be important for him to join us for this first meeting so he can kind of get to know what we're doing here. And just to echo kind of everything that's been said, I do hear and empathize with the difficulties that the airport and airline staff, as well as traveling passengers, have encountered with the ongoing delays. TC will continue to work with CBSA, PHAC, and CATSA to address the bottlenecks at security screening and customs arrival. We recognize that more work needs to be done, and we look forward to continuing our relationship with the GTA.
Fantastic. And welcome, Chris. It sounded like you know most of the people at the GTA off the top of the meeting, and it's good to have that resource locally. You're familiar with a lot of the issues that we're experiencing right now. So I appreciate that. And hopefully that came across too during the presentation about some of the facilitation issues that we're experiencing right now, but definitely working closely with Minister Algarra, Minister Mendocino, PHAC in the terminal and the agencies in the terminal. So they're really strong working relationship. And I know there's working groups that have been formed by the minister that are making progress. And it's just, everyone wants people to get to and through the terminal as quick as possible. So I think we're all rowing in the same direction. So.
Well said.
Thanks, guys. Mr. Batty, you're next on my screen. I don't know if you had any questions or an update.
Yeah, thank you very much. My question concerns my ongoing concerns with Oshawa, which is not really your issue. Mm-hmm. But Oshawa is fundamentally dependent upon the go-ahead on Pickering. And I just wanted to remind you, gentlemen, in your 2008 master plan, it said in 5 years, a 10-year window will occur starting in 2013 and conclude in 2023. All right? And the practical, and that it laid out 4 capacity issues for the development of Pickering and the full capacity of Toronto International Airport. That's the practical capacity of the 5 runway, the maximum capacity of the 5 runway, the practical capacity of the 6 runway, and the full capacity of the 6 runway. And within that, obviously, you had to build your 6th runway. 23 is going to go pretty quick. And there has been no fundamental update by your organization as to when they think the 6th runway is going to come to fruition and when it's going to have a conclusion. The region folks, and the reason Oshawa is pushing its plan is that the aviation sector analysis done by Transport Canada said that the future airfield capacity is constrained by the current system, and there are no plans for adding an additional east-west runway. Your organization makes annual briefings of Durham region and the other regions, as you probably know, and Deborah is probably due to do one. And one of your board of directors said exactly the same thing a couple of years ago. He said, there are no plans for the east-west runway. Now, that's not what your master plan says. Your master plan said a couple of years before that, that we will continue to protect the necessary land zoning as detailed in our land use plan. Demand is indeed growing, and we expect additional airside capacity. So his statement was rather extraordinary. So my question to you is, if Pickering is to proceed, and I understand that the minister makes that final decision, but it's based upon the information that you provide, you will agree. Are you prepared to give all of Southern Air and Ontario communities a more realistic set of estimates and dates for that possibility, if it is to occur at all?
Thank you for the question. I mean, there's a lot there to bite off, but I would just say there's no plans currently. We're not currently planning for a 6th runway, so an additional east-west runway. Transport Canada's on the call if they want to comment on the where they're at with the possibility of a Pickering airport. I know they did engage KPMG in a study. I think that was, I want to say, pre-pandemic. And so I know as an organization, I can comment on behalf of the GTAA and say, I think many organizations, aviation organizations, other airports are are reconsidering what capacity looks like at airports at, due to the pandemic, right? When we look at the fundamental assumptions that were part of previous master plans and even our strategic plans, we're focused on responding to the pandemic and making sure we're on a sound financial and operational footing going forward. And that's really our focus at the moment. I don't know if Transport Canada, if you want to add to that.
I fully appreciate that I'm putting you on a spot here. All right. But capacity, COVID has no issue with capacity. And you're going to fill that bucket a little slower, a little faster, and you're going to take a break in it.
Well, you're asking when we would reach capacity, right? You're quoting a previous master plan that said we would reach capacity by X date.
Yep, 2023.
Right.
And that was profoundly wrong. So we need something. Southern Ontario community needs something realistic. I mean, I appreciate that I'm saying this affects Oshawa, but it affects every other airport based on what your estimates are.
No, and I think, and the only, sorry, I would just add one more thing is, you know, again, pre-pandemic, there hasn't been a lot of work recently. There's been a couple meetings, but there is a, you know, a Southern Ontario airport network. I know Eileen's on the call. She might want to add to this, but we were contemplating, and not alone, but we were contemplating together a regional system of airports and met quite frequently. What could that a regional system of airports look like once Pearson reached capacity? And each would potentially play a different role, right? What are the roles for those regional airports? And so that's still a question on the table, right? And Pickering doesn't, I don't think a future Pickering airport stands alone in isolation from a regional network. It's potentially part of a broader network, but that's a decision for Transport Canada.
Well, it certainly appears from the numbers that you've produced over the years that your sixth runway is probably not going to make it before the turn of the next century. And I'd be more than happy to listen to any set of numbers that you have that suggest otherwise. But I think the community needs to know and understand that. And particularly Oshawa, which is deciding to close itself based on those numbers, is not something that's good for the future of Southern Ontario. And I would like to suggest that you need to sit down and take a really good look at what you're doing here.
It's a fair point, and we'll take it back for sure. And we do talk to, I mean, we just met quite recently with the city of Pickering, with Durham Region.
You're saying Deborah has had a briefing.
I'm saying we met at very recently at a staff to staff level, and those conversations. We do actively talk to staff.
I
don't know if Transport Canada, I can see them on the screen, so I don't know if you have a comment on the Pickering Airport, which is, I think, what you're asking about. Sorry, guys. I don't want to put you on the spot.
My thing's a little bit delayed. My IT stuff's still getting set up. I was clicking and unclicking the mute a bunch of times. So obviously I'm still new, so I'm not going to say too much, but like Pickering and the entire kind of in terms of growth in the area, something that Transport Canada continues to look at. So I can't really comment specifically on Pickering. It's an ongoing policy file for the government of Canada. We continue to explore on it. You're correct that the last kind of big update on that was the KPMG study that we did, I think, pre-pandemic. That is, you can access and you can request from Transport Canada. But at this time, unfortunately, I don't have anything else I could say on this, but happy to take this back. And obviously, like the region is completely and very important to Transport Canada and understanding like the growth and the needs for travel. So we continue to study this issue, but at this time, we can't say much more than that. Amanda, feel free if you have anything else you'd like to add.
Nope, those were perfect words. Thanks, Chris.
So, Mr. Batty, you know, in the interest of time, I think we'll leave it there for today. I'm sure we can continue to talk about it in future meetings. Aline, do you want to jump in? Nope. I saw Lynn come on the screen.
Yeah,
there.
No, sorry. The only thing I was going to say is just back to the comment about the Southern Ontario Airport Network. I think I just want to make sure to clarify that that was not, those conversations were getting together to talk about growth forecasts that were coming, statements by the province about the, you know, growth in population, et cetera. So as inputs to forecasts get updated and revised, so do plans for responding to that. But that activity with Southern Ontario Airport Network was not a central planning exercise. Each individual airport needed to decide for itself in consultation with its own, you know, in some cases they're municipally run, in some cases they're an airport authority like us, but so they have stakeholders, board members, communities, et cetera. They needed to, you know, see the opportunity, and we were just doing our best to share and pass along whatever we knew. But everybody needed to make their own determination about what kind of airport they wanted to be, what kind of airport investment they wanted to make. But it was not, us sort of saying, you do this and you do that. So I just want to be clear that we're not doing the planning work for all of Southern Ontario or all of Ontario, for example. So, but, you know, when we do our own forecasting or do some work, we're happy to share it. We're, as I referenced earlier, we're just at the beginning again of really starting to get ourselves organized to look forward again, as opposed to managing crisis and managing operational response to what's going on. And I think at the beginning of the meeting or the first presentation, you can very clearly see what we're currently actively seized with in the moment. So, but absolutely continue to stay tuned. As things get understood, and the final comment I'll say is, I've been around the airport for a very long time, and I've never seen a forecast that's been right. So I think there was a former CEO that used to say the only thing that's certain about forecasting is that you're going to be wrong. So that's why it's constantly important to review input assumptions, et cetera. And you also heard me say a little bit earlier, you know, we're wondering about structural shifts in the supply chain. We're wondering about structural shifts in the demand for business travel, et cetera. So these are all things that we're like, wow, look what just happened. We better do some thinking about what that actually means, because we don't quite know. So hope that helps.
Yeah, no, that was really, I think it was really helpful clarification and just hearing you think out loud. I mean, even as far, not far forward as the fall, people are talking about a potential, you know, another wave. So you really, no one has a crystal ball, but I think Eileen's, that was really helpful context. So thank you, Eileen.
Well, fingers crossed for everyone's sake, no significant fourth wave, but I guess we will endure and abide as we go forward.
So, Beer, over to you.
Thank you, Michael. I've got two updates. So at the Region Appeal, we will be conducting our transportation master plan. So this will be an update of our current long-range transportation master plan. So this master plan will start sometime in fall, and it will be complete by the end of 2023. And the second update on the goods movement side, we do have a Smart Freight Center, and I know, Michael, you are participating on the Smart Freight Center. So there are several projects that are going on with the University of Toronto, York University, Toronto Metropolitan University, so Ryerson University, as well as McMaster University. So there are many things that are going on. And so if any of our members are interested, please do let me know, or to University of Toronto, and we will be very happy to help with any of the Smart Freight Center or Goods Movement initiatives. Thank you.
Perfect. Great update. And I know you mentioned a couple times that we participate in the Peel Goods Movement Task Force, but we really think of you as the as leading the charge and a great ambassador. And I know we turn to you all the time for when we think of Peel Goods Movement. So
thank you.
Thanks for that, Sabir. Atul, I know Atul. I know all of his updates. So I'll turn it over to Suzanne Acton-Gervais.
Thank you for that. Sorry, I've been bouncing back between my laptop and my phone due to power outages here in the Ottawa area. So thank you for your patience. So just very quickly, I just want to once again say that the National Airlines Council of Canada and our member airlines were very eager to work with the GTA and the Government of Canada to restore a seamless, predictable, and enjoyable experience for the travelers. As I said earlier, this is not just about our businesses. It's about the traveler experience and workers. And we know that the road to recovery, it's not been easy, and we know it can and will improve. Canadians are eager to return to travel, as are international visitors looking to come to Canada, and many arriving in Toronto for business and leisure. And this is a really encouraging and a great sign. We've been waiting for this for a very long time. As I said earlier, part of welcoming travelers back is ensuring that their experience is predictable, timely, and enjoyable, and that with clear service standards and performance metrics similar to other nations. And again, I just want to reiterate that we stand ready to work together, and I appreciate the opportunity to participate today. So thank you.
Perfect. No, I think that the message of collaboration, you know, came through loud and clear, and just a positive tone. Although we're experiencing these really incredible challenges, I think you could just have to stay positive, and people can travel. I mean, people have travel planned. They will go on vacation. We just have to be ready for them and stay positive. I think even publicly, I know these are, I consider these somewhat private conversations. And so when we're speaking publicly, I think the message has to be one of positivity. Try and stay positive.
Certainly a partnership. That's
exactly.
For sure. Thank you very much.
Stephen Tufts.
Thank you, Michael. Just a couple of things. We are happy, TWC, to both endorse and share in the success of the GTAA and its partners, and especially the people who worked very difficult period during COVID-19, dealing with unemployment now, employment and skill shortage all within 18 months. And I think the $1.6 million support from Skills Development Canada to help us recover the labor market and the labor force at Pearson is rightly deserved, and hopefully we can put that money to very good use with that platform and portal. And again, the labor shortages are something that is plaguing several sectors, if not all, at the airport as the recovery happens. And the workers were recalled months ago. Now we're at the place in time where there's just not enough workers to do the work that's required during a recovery. And this has a lot of implications that people aren't even aware of. For example, COVID is still with us. We know that the current variants they might be more transmissible, but they're less severe than the earlier variants. But very much so, people are still getting sick. And when you have a labor shortage and there's pressure on people to come to work all the time, you try to keep absenteeism to an absolute minimum. You're forcing people, literally forcing people in some cases, to work overtime and not allowing them to refuse overtime. And you're pressuring people to come to work when they may be sick with COVID-19. And that's something that I think the dark side of labor shortages and how we manage the pandemic going forward, that people aren't realizing when you put yourself in this situation. That's why I'm very passionate about dealing with this labor shortage problem as quickly and efficiently as possible. We have employment increases in tourism-related sectors, accommodation, for example, food services of 20% just as that sector recovers. Airline recovery and transportation warehouse is also above the average, but a little bit not quite as quite as significant as that. So that's something that's really we are paying our most attention to. And how do we actually deal with that problem? Again, we've had unions that are opening up collective agreements at the request of the employer to increase the bottom or entry level wage so they can attract workers. That's the severity of the case we're in. And we don't think it's something that can be fixed overnight. It's going to be a long-term strategy. And that's why we knew this was going to happen. That was our reason for doing the portal and supporting its development at GTA in the early stages of COVID-19, to track workers as they're unemployed, but also track them so we could call them back and attract them from other sectors. And we're hoping that portal has that, will have that facility. But we are quite concerned, and the impact on work-life balance and the stresses that workers face on the front line by irate passengers is something that we're really concerned about. And Greg and Michael, you've only talked about the tip of the iceberg with the recovery challenges that are going to face on the GTAA and Pearson going forward. Processing of rakes, for example, is another issue that no one talked about today. You can't hire people at an airport unless you can do security vetting and give them permission to be airport workers. And if the government doesn't have the resources to process and renew rakes regularly, then that's a whole other issue as well. So, we'll try to be as positive as we can with the public face. It is challenging, but we do, I think, as the Airport Workers Council, see some stresses ahead as workers come back to work. As a full force. So thank you very much.
Yeah, no, I think that's really helpful, Steve. And I know, like I said, I know you have a standing meeting with some of the folks at the GTA, and I think you're counted on as kind of our eyes and ears on the ground and what's going on with labor and some of the challenges we're experiencing there. So it's great that we can count on you that way. With the skills development funding, I know the team has really ambitious plans for that funding and a airport-wide jobs portal. I've been here close to 7 years now. I've never seen labor shortages quite like this, to the extent that we put up a what I would call a crude version of the jobs portal on our website. It's active currently, and I'll circulate a link to everyone following this meeting. But there are, like Stephen says, there are jobs to be had at the airport. And so we're just trying to help people access the hundreds of companies that operate at the airport and have them have greater access to the available jobs, because there are good jobs in a lot of instances. So thanks for your comments, Steve. I'll bring it back. I have a lot to bring back to the team. I'm taking notes.
Okay, thank you. And on the discussion about Pickering, that was one of the first intense, heated discussions we had when I joined this committee, and that was many years ago. I'm sure that we'll have it again and again and again. Right? Thanks.
Yeah. History repeats itself.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go. Eileen has already weighed in. Walter, over to you, Walter Garrison.
Hi, Michael. Thank you very much for that. One update on our end. We partnered with an organization and hosted the Advanced Transportation Manufacturing Summit, Mississauga 2022, May 10th and 11th at the International Center. So it was a transportation manufacturing related event. So aerospace was significant in this. We had 130 companies there, 230 participants. These are all decision makers, presidents, CEOs, VP of operations. 10 countries were represented, and it was this event previously was at the Toronto Congress Center back in February 2022, and it was, 2020, excuse me. It was supposed to be in February 2022, but Omicron canceled it, but we had it in May. And so it was the first event in over 2 years for a lot of the people there. And to the point about you won't sign a $20 million check without meeting somebody face to face. So this was exactly it. And a lot of people gave the feedback that it was a very good event for business deals, a little bit smaller than we would have liked. But we anticipate in 2 years' time hosting this again. It would be great to have the airport as a part of this. So it's something, it's new to the city doing something like this and actually partnering, but I think it's a really good opportunity, especially with the Bombardier investment. you know, and looking at other revenue streams to look at how we can partner in the future. So happy to discuss that further with you at any time. So
that's my update. You took the words right out of my mouth. We were, you know, at the mayor's address today, someone, I think it was Councillor Fonseca, was saying there's close to 500 people there. Maybe it was Brad. But so, yeah, there's just an energy in the room that's lost over Zoom, I think. And we were sitting next to Sandra Buckler from Bombardier, and it sounds like that project is coming along quite nicely, I think. Thanks, Walter.
Yep, thank you.
Jonathan, you're last but not least on our list. Jonathan Weedle from New York Region.
Hi, Michael, and good afternoon, everyone. Sorry I was late getting to the meeting. Strange how sometimes you're not driving anywhere, but you're still late for your meetings, but you know how it goes. So I will just share one update, and it's really about collision. You know, it ties into the discussion about the challenges getting to the airport and so on. But it is a big show. You know, it's in person, it's getting the energy back in the room, as was just mentioned a moment ago. And the region will be there in collaboration with our local municipal and economic development partners across York Region. We're going to have a very significant presence, and we'll be having, you know, some announcements about investments and innovation. So it's a really exciting time, and it's really good for us to see this energy coming back into the GTA, not just from the tourist side, but from the business side, where people are getting engaged and meeting, and the events scene is coming to life again. So we're looking forward to it. And that's a big thing for us in a week and a half, I guess. So,
yeah, I always think of you as the front lines of economic, you know, folks doing economic development for a living on the front lines of prospective business investment. So you're a good bellwether for how we're doing you know, economically, but as an airport as well. Like when we talk about being a world-class country, region, I think that starts at the airport. It's fair to say with people's experience at the airport. So, but you're closer to that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So we're excited. And I know some of our other communities are going to be there as well. So it's really good to see everybody getting back. Oh, it's going to be the largest event that I've attended in 2 years, so we shall see.
Everyone will collide.
Yes, indeed. Collision.
What's, I have to ask, I mean, you got this drawing behind you. What is that? Is that a turtle?
Yeah. When I brought up my camera, I looked at it and I thought, this looks like an animal. But no, this is, the region has a fiber network, which is unique within the GTA context. And what I was drawing there is some potential links off the fiber network. So. Okay.
I thought it was a turtle, but it's much better as a fiber network. That's a good way to close. Just thanks everyone for your participation. And the next meeting is September 13th, and but we'll be in touch, I'm sure, before then. And everyone, if we don't speak before then, everyone enjoy hopefully some much deserved time off over the summer.
Absolutely.
Except for Councillor Fonseca and Brad, will be on the campaign trail. Take care.
Excellent. Take care, everybody.